This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Got out of town on a boat from the Southern Islands.
I saw these guys a few years ago at the Greek Theater in Hollywood. Pretty good, I'm not going to lie to you. They actually ended pretty funny, too. And in the middle of the show, Graham Nash had a dude thrown out of the show. It's awesome. He, dude stands up, and I don't know what he was doing. He was standing up, and I don't know if he's yelling at him during the show, and he just stops the show. And he points to the dude, and he says, get his ass out of here.
Wow. He had history with that guy.
You know, you never know, because some of these people do that shit. But he just sat down on a stool. He said, "We're not playing until that guy gets out of here." And then the whole crowd of like 70,000 people looked at this dude. He got booed and they threw shit at him. But the song's called Southern Cross. I'm the only one in my family, with the exception of my uncle, who was on a. An oiler during World War II that has seen the Southern Cross.
Wow, that's right.
Yeah, you've seen the Southern Cross, so not everybody sees it, man. So Jeff Kenny joins me. Want to have Jeff on. He got a chance to see post-traumatic winning. He'd seen it at Camp Pendleton when I did it for the division commander and the regimental and separate battalion commanders, but a little bit different when bunch of Marines there. So what were your thoughts?
Well, it's more compelling with the youngsters there because their reactions are more visceral. And you can see, and if you know Marines, if you've been around them for a while, you know that they're all, like you said about the earlier ones, leaning forward, you know. And not, there's no baloney, there's no muttering in the background or anything. It's just, they're listening. Of course, they're not going to ask questions because they take shit from their buddies later just for asking a simple question and stuff, so they're not going to do that. But the folks coming up afterwards, during the breaks, and then at the end of the presentation, it was indicative of the fact that, you know, it really hit home with them. And a lot of people, you can see them talking to each other about this. So the key, I think, is going to fall on the junior leaders to field these things, you know, and not let it... you know, not let it just sit there and then get old. As the guidance from General Furness, he said, hey, we're going to follow up on this stuff. We're going to do this. And the bottom line is, this is all about you guys taking care of each other. So I think that was, that was really something, and especially when you contrast that with the reaction of the wives, which I think you're going to talk about first. And then, not that it was bad, but it was different.
Right. You know? Right. No, I'll tell you what, it's really fun, and I've said this before, but it's really fun to watch our friend, who's a CG of the 2nd Division, stand up, and he's good at it, too.
Yeah.
And it's fun. That's the first time you had seen him do it. What do you think?
Yeah, I talked to the guy probably hundreds and hundreds of hours through the years. Late at night, when he's running a portion of the field exercise, I'm in overall in charge of the whole exercise, or vice versa. We're there at 2 o'clock in the morning drinking coffee, watching the lieutenants do their defensive ops, and just talking to each other about things, you know. And in a sense, that's the background of all of us. We weren't on our cell phones. There weren't any cell phones. We just talked to each other. And so, and the one unifying trait of all of us was we were really interested in the infantry side of combat, small unit infantry side of combat. But in doing that and in talking about why you do that, you know, a lot of personal stuff comes out. And so hearing him do that in the gutsy way that he put out there, you know, his own personal tribulations that he's had through the years with his family and so forth, it's an inspiring thing. Because right away, you can see it in the young men's faces that, we're all in this together. And the whole point of the Marine Corps is we are going to go into traumatic situations. That's why we're here. And because when... the nations fail to be able to require things of each other, then one of them decides they're going to compel, and then that means war, that means combat, and that is by definition a trauma, intense trauma, and it has to be handled. And so some of the things that come out during the presentation, some of the facts show that trauma is unpleasant most of the time, but it's not necessarily destructive.
And no, that's well. You know, that's well said. I added a series of pictures after a slide that talks about a crisis is an opportunity for a leader, and it's a series of pictures of Marines in fights. Leading, right? And there's a picture of probably First Lieutenant Wesley Fox in Vietnam on the radio, right? Looking like a real life John Wayne. there's a couple of pretty famous pictures from Iraq. One is at the bridge in Nasiriya, where you see Marines yelling at it. You know, I don't know if they're yelling for, you know, machine gun team to come up or. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, a rocket team to come up, or a corpsman to come up. You don't know what they're yelling at. But the intensity on their face, right, trying to get it done, is in there. There's a picture of a Marine, it looks like walking down the street in Iraq, with a headset on, right, and he's pointing, right? He's pointing, so he's directing somebody. And so, to me, and the point of that is, this is our craft and trade. This is what we portray to the nation, that when this happens, you want us to be there. And this is what we do. And so as a leader, you have to look at a crisis as an opportunity. But the problem is the culture that young people come from doesn't do any of that.
Right.
And so we have to move their cheese. And to get them to see adversity is not a bad thing in their life. It's there, and it's really for us to overcome. So, but I love that, and so to me, the way Dave articulates it, and you were just talking about it, that we are in this together, and this is what we've chosen, and we have to get good at it. But I've seen him do that, you know, what, 12 times, 14, that's 13, 14, 15 times.
Right. Right.
And it never gets old, you know. As Jeff was talking, you know, we got to know each other as captain lieutenants out in the woods working on problems, right? Raining, sitting on logs, waiting for, you know, lieutenants to show up, and arguing about, you know, articles and stuff like that. And that's how that was the basis for all of our relationship. And so, even as well as you know somebody, to see him stand up as a leader and do these things, it's all. You know, it's very, very cool. Talk to me about the spouse thing. Very different,
right?
Women get it from the start, and so it's very interesting to hear their questions, to hear the things they say.
Right. It's when you get married, and you share so much, especially if you have children, so many intimacies and stuff, and so there's so little possibility of. Of deceit, really. You know, if it's an honest marriage, you can't hide your feelings, except for the wives who are married to jarheads, because they cut that part out. They just don't usually, and the reason is because it is sometimes intense. Sometimes you always come out good in these little vignettes that happen. You know, day to day in the Marine Corps. Hey, I was a jerk today, boy, and I got my ass handed to me. You don't want to have your wife hear that. But they noticed that hole, and they noticed that gap in their relationship. And so the perception when we're watching that thing is they're leaning into it. They want to get to that to help the guy. Most of them just want to help the guy, help the spouse who's in the service, who's in the Marine Corps particularly, who, you know, this guy's going through this thing, this strange brotherhood, and they want to help the guy with it, you know, especially the first termers who are married, because everything's alien to him. His wife is pretty new. He's only 19 and 20. So many of these youngsters are married. That being married is new. If they have a kid, oh my God, that's new. And then there's this thing they're in, like in the guy with the Sicilian thing, but it's not. It might as well be.
It's a Marine Corps thing.
Right. It's
right?
Like so many unwritten rules.
Right.
Know? And he's trying to navigate it, you know, and I think that really is the key to some of our problems.
No, and I remember, well, last night his spouse said, I can see the distance in him, right, the more he does this. And that is the way that we do it, though, right? I mean,
right.
We can handle our business, and so, you know, I can't go there with you. And
right.
And that's how we learn it,
right.
and which is really interesting. And that's why I think it's so important that we, you know, that we, as senior guys, become the first leaders that look at, you know, those younger than us and say, hey, man, you got to talk about it. And it's okay to talk about it. Don't be afraid. It's just as you go to the gym to get your body well, you got to get your brain well. And a big part of getting your brain well is, and keeping your mind right, is disclosure, is talking about it. And don't be afraid to do that. And don't be afraid to do it with your spouse. And, you know, and so that's why, I mean, and it's one thing for you and I to say it, but it's another thing for the commanding general to stand up there.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? And say it. And then another thing for the commanding general to say it in front of the spouse.
Yeah.
You know, because that's pretty significant. Like, hey, I just heard your commanding general say that you need to talk to me.
Yeah, you didn't hear it very often. I know.
Right.
We're ever.
I've never heard anybody say that to me.
When I was a lieutenant in the basic school, the CO of the basic school was Terry Ebert. And he did talk to us, especially the guys. He talked to the guys going to IOC. And we were going January and March to IOC. Our class graduated in December. And it was a good class. A lot of our friends are in. Mellinger was in that class, Phil Scooter. And there's a guy named Dabney, whose father was a colonel, used to have come to the base school. His
right.
grandfather's Jesse Puller. So, but Colonel Ebert gave us he was a CO of Echo 25, I think, in Vietnam. And he told the story of Bolio. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
He was a CO when I was there.
CEO of the base school.
Right.
Okay, so when you came in, he was still there.
Right.
Because I came in right when he took over from, I think it was General Rowe. And he did. He talked about this guy, Bolio. His first job in Camp Pendleton when he got there was a second. He was a first lieutenant company commander. But when he got there, his first job was to get Bolio out of jail. Bolio was an 0331, a machine gunner. And so he got him, he put him in the barracks, okay, Bolio, stay put, you know, we're going to deal with you later on in the week. The next day, the guy went out again. He went UA from the, and he got thrown in jail again. But then they went to Vietnam, and Bolio was an outstanding combat Marine, especially the M60, which, in small unit action, in those days, that was the lifesaver, because he could put out a lot of rounds. Matter of fact, they call the M60 the pig, the Vietnam guys did, because all the rounds you could eat. You know, and Bolio saved the platoon that he was in, and maybe the company, and he was killed. And Ebert told us the story of that. It was the closest I had heard a high-ranking officer come to you know, talking
right.
about the real thing
right.
about this. And you know, it was we never heard anything. From about, you know, people who were. Now, I had prior enlisted time, and I was querying these guys, and they would tell you after a while if you juiced them up with enough booze.
But you had to bug them, right? You had
yeah.
to bug them,
yeah.
and then you had to give them booze.
Yeah. I mean, well, I didn't give it to them, but, like, they would, you know.
No, they'd be in a bar,
right.
and if you had a relationship with them because you bugged them before,
yeah.
and they
yeah.
saw you and you sat down, that would be when it would happen.
Yeah, the first guy was my NCYC in Tehran. And I was in Iran before the takeover of the Islamic. You know, revolution that they had there. But things were getting tense. And this new NCRC we had a lot of Vietnam experience. Started out as 0341, you know, became a squad leader, you know, became a staff sergeant, you know. So he was very combat experienced. And he used that. We did react drills to, in case what happened to us, exactly what happened to the guys who came in after us. And he wasn't going to...
When the embassy was overrun.
He wasn't going to... That wasn't going to happen on his watch with a lot of dead, you know, enemy. And so he had... We did everything from put... we had like a yellow plan where you went and you put ammo in pre-stage places, so we wouldn't have to haul it when we ran across. And there's a lot more weapons in that embassy than your normal Marine security guard detachment because of the situation. And but I talked to him about it. I said, and it reminded him. Matter of fact, he referred back to his Vietnam experience to the point where the guy was, he was like an IOC instructor, but he was a gunny, brand new gunny too. He's 29 years old. We thought he was as old as Methuselah, you know, because we were all 19 or so, you know.
Right,
and
right.
And he, you know, so he was like that too. But it was part of a, to get it out of those guys, it had to be part of a, you know, something, some training. How does this relate to what, how did it relate to what you really did?
Right.
And then they would sometimes tell you.
Sometimes. I'm amazed, and I've asked this to guys who went to Korea in 1950. Did the World War II guys sit down and say, "Hey, this is what you're going, this is what you'll go through"? They said no. They didn't say a word.
Right.
And then I asked, you and I were talking the other day. I asked Tom Drowdy about. He's one of the first there was Marines in Vietnam, but Drowdy was I think one of the first companies and battalions that went ashore. And I said, "Did they talk in Korean, World War II guys?" He said, "Well, all our senior guys were." They were made men. They had combat experience. He said, but no, nobody said anything, which is weird. I would just think that you would say, all right, everybody sit down. I want you not to have your head up your ass. All right, so here's what's going to happen. We get shot at. You're feel like you don't know what's going on. There's rounds flying everywhere, crazy
right.
stuff.
Right.
Just do what you've been trained. Just take a deep breath. Pay attention to what you know how to do. And if you do that, things will take care of themselves. Don't worry about getting killed because it's more luck than skill, right? And so don't let that bother you.
Yeah.
If you're going to die, you're going to die. There's nothing you can do about it.
And you mentioned a couple of times during the presentation the fact that you're Catholic, yeah. which I am. But I'm not a very good Catholic.
Neither am
my,
I.
I don't think you are either. So,
what?
But the idea of the rituals you go through and the things you name stuff. And so my attitude towards like hand and arm signals, before I was actually in action, hand and arm signals, why we do stuff, was almost like going to Mass. Okay, now's where we say the Apostles' Creed. That's where we got to shake hands with somebody. I hate this part. Please offer each other. And when I was married, when my kids were little and we were taking them to Mass in Quantico, I would sit in the back rows, thus cutting down the numbers of people I had to shake hands with to show the sign of peace. And so it was like a ritual until, you know, you talk to people. And it's amazing because you listen to Oliver North and James Webb, two guys who are legendary for not liking each other, and they got almost the same guidance to lieutenants going into action for the first time. I mean, guidance for specific things like how to use your patrols and how to, you know, the use of mortars, the use of how you cover dead space. And they remember it burned in their mouths. It's more than a Catholic ritual to
right,
them.
Right.
It's how they lived out there, you know. So.
No. The... Any other thoughts on watching the spouse's presentation? What's really interesting is that when we get finished with the Marines, I mean, yesterday was about 2.5 hours,
right?
Right, and they're ready to go, right? And then some come down and talk, and then others, you know, everybody else is like, let's get out of here. Spouses, though, they stay.
Yeah.
They want to talk about it.
Yeah, and obviously not as many of them because not as many, you know, married people, but... they're in there. They want to get something out of it. They want to squeeze every bit of juice out of that, you know, if they can. So, yeah, that's... matter of fact, sometimes you're not prepared for what they're asking, you know? And it's not that you're not prepared, but it's like you're not expecting them to say, how do we get this out more? You know, and you're like, I'm fine.
How do we make it how do we make it mandatory?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, no, it's incredibly flattering on one hand, but gratifying at the same time because, you know, this is just the stuff all of us have wrestled with, and our solution has always been to isolate ourselves to our own detriment, to our own suicidal detriment. And if we can get everybody to understand it, suicide is the facing movement and the first step towards a door that leads to destructive behavior. So as long as you can communicate, you don't make that facing movement, you don't take that step, And wives get it because they live it. They, as Jeff said, they want, you know. In fact, there was one girl, and she's young, and she said, "Look, girls are open books. We talk about our stuff like to each other fairly easily." And then I was standing at the time, and I said, "Yeah, we don't do it like that." And she laughed, and she goes, "No," and that's when she said, "I can see my husband changing the more he does this, the more he withholds from me." And then she said something interesting. She said, "Except when he drinks. Then it'll come out and I'll hear, 'You don't know what I've been through.'"
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And their response is, "I want to."
Yeah.
You know, I'll go there with you. And so it's us. I mean, you know what I mean? It's at the end of the day, it really is us. And it's, you know, the way we get raised, that, you know, grandpa didn't talk about World War II, my uncle didn't talk about Vietnam, and so, you know, this is how we do it, which is not really how you should do it, and slowly but surely we're learning, but it's, so that's why spouses have such a different, that's why they're such huge proponents of this, and like the major steps that this has taken, I was talking about last night, was this got to the GOS because Dave's wife, Linda, told him, "Hey, you need to do this," and then Ellen Dunford was at the GOS, and so, you know, that got spawned, you know, and then there was other women. A friend of mine named Krista Vucic, his wife Sheila, was at. She works in the Capstone program, and so she went down and said, "This needs to go there," because immediately they seize on it. So, I very 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 interesting. Give me a few other observations as you.
Well,
kind
first,
of,
one thing about Linda. Linda is. Usually does not weigh in to people about how they should do this or that. So when she does, it really makes you listen. Mm. You know, she's really very polite person, and you know,
polite Southern girl.
Yeah, a lot of the other wives, they're always talking, they're always chirping, you know, telling you this and that, you know. And so, but when Linda talks, you listen because she doesn't say anything unless she really, you know, thinks it's important.
Let alone be an advocate or be directive, right?
Right, yeah.
So, yeah.
And so that, you know, that's another thing that jumps out at you, for sure.
All right. Any other observations from yesterday?
No, it was good for me to hear it because it was, you know, here's what I came across the whole, the whole thing was pretty much boiled down to this for me. The irony of the fact. You have a group in the United States military whose job it is not to sneak in to, you know, rescue a hostage, not to make sure the seas are safe, not to, you know, fly off into the wild blue yonder. But when it's nasty and you can't get around the fact that something nasty and bloody has to be done, we're the guys that do it. We're the guys that do it. You know, we're always studying about neat ways to cheat the hangman when it comes to military ops. But the reason Iwo Jima is the main battle of the Marine Corps that signifies Marine Corps is there's no other way to do this but to just face the guy and come at him. Fire movement. You know, you got to dig him out, it's the hardest thing you can do in combat. People say, "Oh, it's harder to do counterinsurgency. When your life is at the most risk. The one unifying factor every human and most animals is the desperate struggle to stay breathing as long as possible, and to willingly go into a situation where you're going to put that at risk yourself. It causes huge trauma, huge stress. Will I do it? Will I have the courage to do it? What will it be like to be hurt? Will I let my buddies down? That's the big one. And the dichotomy is that all other trauma is ignored by us, but yet it has an effect. And so you got these youngsters coming in now, and time goes by. The Marine Corps is like the most turnover service there is. We got more young people always than any other service.
Yeah, 60% of the Marine Corps are under the age of 26, and a third of the Marine Corps turns over.
Right.
right? I want to say we turn over 30,000 bodies on an annual basis. Right. And that's an incredible amount of churn.
And for these guys, they're coming in out of some of the things you identified, you identified during the presentation about just the realities of the way life is, you know, for several reasons. But so these youngsters, there's them, the uninitiated in their minds, and then there's the older, some of them not too much older, but like there's the kids in their 30s and stuff like that who are staff sergeants and who have been in combat too, and they haven't, and there's a dividing line. And I remember when I first came in the Marine Corps in 1975, it was the exact same dividing line. And it was unthinkable to go up to them and say, "Hey, Gunny, you know, were you in Vietnam? What'd you do there? What'd you do in the war?" You desperately want them to tell you, but it seemed like one of those many unwritten rules.
You can't
go.
You didn't ask.
And so we ignored it. And what do we got? We got suicides. We had drunks. Guys using drugs. People going UA and getting in trouble. You know, and I'm not saying that there's always a certain percentage of people that happens to. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you get a lot of people who, you always wonder, if we had just been talking, could this have been forestalled? Could we have not had to go and recruit another kid out of high school because this guy's okay? So that's really, that's the goodness of this. And the fact that everybody sees that, you know, I can step up from being a Lance Corporal to being a fire team leader corporal. And then I can step up. And if I do right, you know, I can see value in this life. In this life. And the value lies, the point of this presentation is the value lies in passing the nuts and bolts of your job to people who are going to be doing it as you move into, you know, supervisory positions. But at the same time, pass to them the, you know, the fact that this is going to be rough sometimes. This is going to be rough sometimes. And rough is rough. It doesn't mean that rough in a horrible incident when you were, you know, a young teenager or a child in Omaha, Nebraska, isn't really have the same effect as having a rough situation, you know, in Western Iraq. It's just a matter of, it's trauma that you got to deal with in order to go on. You can either let it, you know, continue to hurt you, or you can realize that you're going to have to live with this thing forever, and then use it to continue on. You know, use it so it doesn't weigh you down.
No, and I think that's the, what I love about it is, you know, providing tools, give them a different perspective, a way to look at it, and say, you can do this. And ultimately, by doing it, by touching other people's lives, right, you enhance your own. So the very thing that we would, that you would not think, which is trauma enters my life, I'm going to live a diminished life. Mm-hmm. And telling them that, no, the opposite's true, right? And we can all be trauma mentors for other people and show them that door, you know, in the back of the room, through the smoke and through the debris, right, that's there, that's not easy to find on your own, but we can all be guides to people to help them find that place and help you live a greater life. And if you do that for people, man, it's the coolest thing in the world. And so, you know, and Marines get it, I think. I mean, because, again, the statistics are that we are 50% more likely to have trauma in our lives. You know, we come looking for structure. We come looking for safety. We come looking for a better place, a lot of us. And I'm included in that. And you know, we find it. And now, but I think there's, as Jess said, there's always been that dichotomy, right? So brave and so courageous, but we don't talk about it. You know, and not in a way that we don't brag about it, but we don't talk about it in a wellness way, where when we need to talk about it. And so, to me, you know, that planting those seeds, hopefully, and then planting them with wives, and hopefully, you know, you begin to change lives and the building of a tsunami that will, you know, and I don't think how it stops. I don't, because it is right. It's nothing but right and pure. And to now, when you think about it, to not do it and to isolate yourself, you're like, yeah, that's not smart. I don't know. But we all did it. We all did it. We all faked it. So anyway. Anyway. All right. That'll, anything else to add?
Nope.
All right. We ate at a place called Twin Peaks last night. Tell me that pot roast and those pickles, those fried pickles were awesome.
I'll tell you about Twin Peaks. That's the first time I've ever been in there, but I heard about it. And I heard about it because this is where I retired from, Lejeune.
Right.
And we drive, Western Boulevard is where everything is here, right? So we drive up, and my wife would say, that's this place's version of Hooters. I think it's stupid.
Which is true.
It is true.
But Twin Peaks is not about mountains, just so you know.
Or a movie or a show. So I'm thinking, yesterday Mac says, let's go eat at Twin Peaks. So I'm like, at the same time I get a text from Lori, where are you guys eating? So I go, we're just leaving the base now, somewhere on Western Boulevard. So I wasn't going to really, well, yes, I was going to lie. I wasn't going to say like we're in Bennigan's or something like that. But I was going to try and avoid the issue. But that pot roast is so good. And so when I told her, I said, yeah, I went to Twin Peaks. And I had great pot roast. I'm in a meat coma right now, you know, about to pass out. And she didn't mind. So
no, the pot roast and the fried, I love the fried pickles, man. So that's where we went.
That's another discovery. Never had
those. You know, and neither did I, but I ordered them last time we were here. And they were delicious, so... Yeah, so if you want a culinary recommendation from Mac and Jeff, when you get to Jacksonville, Twin Peaks, man, the pot roast it's like something that your grandmother would make.
Yeah,
it's delicious. The gravy and the mashed potatoes and the pot roast itself, it's to die for. So there you have it. All right, we'll come back, wrap things up. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. That'll do it on a Tuesday. Thanks for listening. If you're just tuning in, don't touch that dial. This thing repeats itself immediately. Broadcasting live from Jacksonville, North Carolina, home of the 2nd Marine Division and the Marines of the 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force, along with the sailors that help out as well. Thanks for listening today. Have a great day on a Tuesday. All Marine Radio, over and out. And my life.